Hello, diamond beauties and interdimensional beings of light. It's Lisa here, your mystic guide, inviting you to come and take a ride with me as we journey through space and time. Our mission is to create conscious content for 1111D, sharing resources of light for the new reality. Welcome to the Buddhist Biohacker.
Buddhist Biohacker would like to thank our partners Block Therapy, Purity Coffee, Dry Farm Wines, Omnia, and 2-1 Photography. Information can be found on lisamgunshore.com. Join our forum at miwi.com/Buddhist Biohacker and watch live on YouTube on the Buddhist Biohacker channel.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. It is our One Heart, One Earth November Awakening event, and this is all about global healing and raising the vibration. We have been live for 4 hours already today, and I cannot believe how energized I feel, how fast time has flown, and that's how I know we're doing it right. So welcome into the live. If you are just now joining, please click subscribe. Thank you so much in advance for that. And also go to oneheartoneearth.net. You can view all of the presentations, the schedule. We have our Vision for the Planet compilation and other things up on the site, and we'll be adding some new creative things all throughout the week. And I am so excited that my midday event is with you, Satyam.
Oh, great to be here as always. Looking forward. Yeah, this is great. Wonderful to be with you. Still riding the nice wave of our talk from last week.
Oh, I know. Last week was, I felt like it was just so good. And every time I talk to you, it's so good, which is why we love you so much here at Buddhist Biohacker. Mm-hmm. But I was really into the fasting talk. I was like, man, I hope we talk more about stuff like that in the new year too. And I know you've got great topics planned because I've seen them. So yeah. But it was just really great. And I'm really excited to have you back. And before we dive in, everybody who is joining the live, I invite you please to share your comments, questions, stories. We love it. And you guys have been such a great participating audience today. And if you're listening later on audio, or you're watching on the replay, you guys can comment in our forum on MeWe. You can comment here on YouTube as well. So Satyam, I know that we all know who you are, but there are definitely new people to our community. If you want to briefly share who you are to them.
Sure. Wonderful. My name is Satyam. I'm a yoga instructor. But more than that, I kind of feel like I'm a seeker. And as we all are, I suppose. And in my early 20s, I was interested in questions about how to live on this earth, and yoga seemed to provide all the answers I was looking for. And I spent a number of years living in India with my yogacharya, and each and every day became a tool for implementing more and more of the yogic ideals into my daily living experience. And that's really how I spent my 20s, building that brick by brick. And That's been the go-to. That's been what's really given me momentum and inspiration in life. And so, and then more recently, I've been teaching yoga classes and running Renaissance Yoga out of Maryland. And that's in a nutshell. And we can build on that as we go here.
Yeah, for sure. I have to show you, Satyam. So first off, I guess I haven't really talked about it today, but I do have, it's hidden by my microphone. I do have my gold ribbon on. So if you guys want a gold ribbon, just shoot an email to us at mail@lisamgunshore. I have a whole batch of them. I have some in the mail, but our gold ribbons are because we're taking a stand against violence. But I also just wanted to show you my awesome t-shirts. This is one of my own t-shirt designs, and it says, "Wake up, there's work to do." And then it has this awesome rainbow on it. And I just thought it was too good. And so I had to share that with you because I just
I appreciate that. How do we get it? How do we get those shirts?
They are all on my website. So if you go to lisamgunshore.com and you click on apparel, all of my shirt designs are there. And I have some new ones coming out. And some of them are kind of funny and some of them are meaningful. But I was in fashion for 22 years. And so I do love fashion. All of the shirts, the distributor I found, they're made in the USA. They're eco-friendly. They're actually really nice quality. I'm really happy with how they came out with the ones that I've gotten. So there you go.
Nice. I'll be going in there to get mine.
Yes. Well, and I need to send you a gold ribbon too.
Please.
These are awesome. Courtesy of Carrie, who's in the Morning Pulse check. It's hard to see because the gong is gold and the ribbon's gold. But anyway. So let's talk about the yoga outlook. What do you have prepared for us? We're already getting some comments. So let's dive in.
Okay, very good. Yeah. So first off, I just want to say all questions are welcomed across the entire spectrum of yoga, and let's see what we come up with. So everyone's welcome to pose questions, and we'll build those in. So basically, when you came up with the notion for the November Awakening, I did the talk or the class on remembering who you are. That was the theme. And so I taught the whole class based on that theme. And because it actually works extremely well with the whole essence of yoga. And the main thing of yoga is don't get lost in the pursuit of materialism or the external chase of allurement. Remember your true nature. That's what Muttada meditation is all about. That's what each and every aspect of the yogic life is about. Remember, you're a spiritual being. Never forget that. But it's very easy to forget. It's easy because this world is full of glitz and glamour. And we're here to do justice on this world and not to exploit or accumulate. But we see what the theme of the day is. Those people who exploit, those who accumulate, they get a lot of prestige. They're looked upon as wealthy, of great entity. So people naturally, even if that's not their inclination in life, but if you're going to get praised for that and be rewarded financially and given social status for those things, naturally that will also lure people in who might not even be inclined towards that. And the whole yogic system is, remember who you are. You are a spiritual being. You are a manifestation of cosmic consciousness. And you have an inherent link with each and every entity, if each and every manifestation being in this cosmos. And don't forget that. You come here to serve, not to usurp. You've come to grow spiritually and then to adjust physically and psychically, not to become accumulators in the physical world. That's not the goal. That's something to, we all need certain material needs, but the goal is spiritual development. And so that was the whole essence of the talk. And that's really what yoga was all about from the get-go, that people wanted to know. The first question of yoga was, who am I in this universe? What is this phenomenal expression around me and what's my role in it? And that's what the yogis were interested in, that spiritual quest, that meditative journey. And that got them going. That started the entire process and system of yoga. And the yoga postures, the yogic diet, all those came in later in support of that initial query of who am I and remembering our true nature in this world. And so the yogis basically found, okay, well, it's not so easy. Even if you know the answer to who you are, it's not so easy to remember it all day long. It's not easy. There's so many things that will make you forget. And so they came up with this systematic way of living that serves as reminders that, okay, don't forget this point. It's the easiest thing in the world to think of. Okay, I'm one with the whole cosmos. Everybody can say it. Everybody can grasp the idea. Everybody says, oh, that's so beautiful. We're all one. But then wait a second. How much of your daily life really reflects that spirit? How many of your thoughts really complement that ideal? And that's a challenge for all of us. And so the yogis just came up with this systematic way of living that will serve it. There's so many reminders that you can't help but not get to the day without remembering at least a few times or more than that. And of course, after you remember it a few times, it actually starts to become part of your psychic outlook. It becomes part of who you are. It's no longer just an intellectual or an inquisitive notion, but it really stems from your heart center, from the very pulsation of your life that you cannot. It's akin to someone who dreams about motherhood and thinks about it, and someone who's actually a mother. It may be an inspirational notion or philosophical notion, and the other, it's the essence of who she is, and it cannot be separated from her human experience. It cannot. She embodies that. And that's what the whole yoga practice is about, becoming a living embodiment of that ideal. And so that's where we're at, you know. And for instance, all of Jama and Niyama, the 10 codes of yogic morality, are based on that. And one of them is known as Brahmacharya. And Brahma means the oneness. Char means to move. And the idea is that wherever you move in this universe, never forget there's oneness, that all everything you see, you come across as an expression of that oneness. And so that ideal, it's called Madhuvidya, sweet outlook or sweet knowledge, that when you remember that ideal before your each and every action, everything in life will be sweet, like the honey of knowledge. So that's the essence, and it's so easy to express verbally and so challenging to embody on a day-to-day basis. But as we embrace that idea, we find ways to do it. And as we create a sangha or a satsang or a community, then we get reminders about it, because more and more people are moving in that flow, in that type of ideally spiritual-based existence and seeing the world in that manner.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up Brahmacharya too, because I think that is really important right now, because I feel like there's so much division.
Oh, yeah.
So how do we bring ourselves back together is my question. But then Heather also said, excited to learn about which type of yoga practice will help clear the major blockages between myself and my gifts, and where can I access the yoga virtually? But is there, what do you think about yoga practice to clear blockages between, you know, yourself and your inherent gifts and talents? Like, do you think there's one particular kind of yoga? Do you think there's certain postures? Do you think it doesn't matter?
Meditation. Postures will help. Postures will help prepare the mind for meditation. But the essence of yoga is meditation, or sadhana, as they call it. And that allows us to tap into our true nature. It clears all the complexes of the mind, that the defeatist complex, the inferiority complex, the fear complex. Everybody has some degree of complex, or most everybody. And that helps evaporate those. And then we just tap into our true inherent qualities. And you know, once one is free of fear, then that opens up a lot of spectrum. There are actually two types of fear. There's physical fear, which is helpful. That's, you know, that if someone goes to the edge of a cliff and they look down and it's scary, that's a survival mechanism. And that's needed. But then there's the other type of fear that's imposed, psychic fear, about worry about the future, about am I good enough? All these types of fears or inadequacies. Does anyone love me? And all these types of worries and concerns. And when that is removed, and that's what meditation does, it slowly but surely clears the mind. And those are blockages, those complexes, those fears. And some we are born with, like as part of our mental makeup, our samskaras, means our inherent abilities. And some get imposed, like if you've been if let's say there's a third grader who goes to school and everybody's teasing him, and they say, oh, you're, I don't even want to use a word, but whatever the word may be, that imposed complex may stick with him for a while. And it's not true, but it gets imposed. So these blockages are both external and internal, but meditation will clear them, whether they're external or internal, and it will get us very much towards our source. And that gives so much freedom and so much power and confidence that that the meditative process is incredibly helpful for really discovering who we are and what our true mission is during this life.
So good, so true. And you know, one of Heather's questions too is anything better for energy flow? I'll let you answer that one. I have other questions. I was pausing because I'm like, go on, ask my other question, but I'll let you answer that if you want to, and then I'll have my other questions.
Sure, that's fine. No, energy flow is that's really, really important. We'll go through a few different aspects of life. Hang around people with a positive outlook and who love you. Don't hang around people who are dragging you down. That's as best as possible. Number two, be careful with your food and diet. Avoid all types of intoxicants. Try and take a little bit of raw food every day. In terms of sleep, don't oversleep, don't undersleep. Oversleep will bring further fatigue. Undersleep will make you chronically tired. So make sure you're able to adjust your sleeping patterns. And then spend time every day walking outside. That's very, very helpful. And then try and do a few yoga postures and meditation each day. There's a lot of things that will help one's energy, and I hope I touched on certain aspects of life that might help improve for Heather and for others.
Siam, is there something that you do to, I don't know if analyze is the right word, but how do you check in with your own energy flow? Like, is there something that you do to see if there's things that are out of sync or out of flow with your body, with your environment, what do you do? I'm guessing you're not out of flow that often, but we all are human. So. No,
I may be out of flow so often that it's hard to recognize. It's one of part of my normal way, and people just get used to it. But it's a very good question how to do that. The yogis say that one of the practices everyone should take care of each day is called self-analysis, just to take a look at oneself. But that is difficult to do. But one is try and step back and see how you're interacting with others. That's the first thing. If you're mentally irritated, then that will quickly manifest in the way you address others, both in the quality of your speech and in the tone of your speech, the substance of the talk. And that's a very good indicator. You know, if one is arguing, getting into petty disputes with everyone from one moment to the next, that's a clear indicator that we should be able to live in a balanced way. And then and to be able to give scope for one's interaction should be smooth with others. And if that's smooth, then that's a clear indicator. Another thing is one should feel a sense of inspiration that life is not meant to be dreary. So it should feel some sense of inspiration. And a lot of that is like, what's in my mental realm? What am I thinking about? Am I remembering some type of spiritual ideal in my life? And that's very, very helpful. So if you can look at what your psychic occupation, yogis say, what are the thoughts that are incurring, that are taking up your mental space? Are they all just to-do lists and very much mundane things? Or is there some greater thing that's making life exciting and inspirational, even when you don't have that in a situation? For example, if going to the beach, if going to the movies and all these types of external things are what's going to keep you inspired, you're going to run out pretty quickly. You're going to run out of inspiration pretty quickly. And if you're able to cultivate a sense of inspiration, regardless of where you are, which is what spirituality is all about, then that's a big boon. And that sense of inspiration is really, I find, a very key towards good energy flow. That what is the source of my, so that's what I would say top dog in my book, as much as anything. Then of course there's meditation, there's proper food, there's the other things I was talking about. But that would be where I try and check in. What is it that's making me happy? Is it the fact that I just got, that someone praised me, that's not going to go long. Is it because, I made a little bit more money today than yesterday? Well, you know, it should be something that doesn't fluctuate so much. It shouldn't be transactional in nature.
Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. You're sparking something for me, because there are definitely, I think when I feel like uninspired or block, like that is the block of my flow. It's like, I can tell if I've hit a week. I had one a couple weeks ago where I hit a week where it's like, I don't want to do anything. Like, I don't want to do a show. I don't want to do anything on my website. I don't want to write. I don't want to do anything.
Yeah.
And sure enough, I realized like, I really haven't been practicing my yoga, really haven't been outside. And I started cycling and getting outside and starting to move my body and being in nature. And it was like, nature definitely inspires me. And so all of a sudden it was like, oh, I'm ready to do everything again. And so that's an important thing. The inspiration is huge. And Claire's asking, any advice for somebody who struggles with focusing during meditation?
Yeah, that is... And don't feel alone in struggling for focused meditation. The yogis have a saying, the dharma of the aspirant is to sit and meditate, and the dharma of the mind is to run. So it's an inherently difficult situation. But
that should be on a t-shirt, Sayam.
Yeah, that may be your next t-shirt. That may be it. We'll come up with a good color pattern.
Yes.
Claire, the practice helps. Some people's mind is so running from one external allurement to the next, they don't even realize that it's running. The fact that you're sitting for meditation and drawing the mind back, never give way to that daydream or the mind running. As soon as you realize it's running, bring it back. Bring it right back to that focal point of meditation. And little by little, the mind will become harnessed. And when the mind becomes harnessed, it will like that, and it will yearn to become harnessed and goad in that meditative track. So it gets easier. So just stick at it. Stick with it. Keep bringing the mind back. The mind is meant to be drawn back. The mind is, there's one good quality about the mind also. It will learn to like whatever stimulus is given. People can just with very crude environments and start to like those things to their detriment. And the mind will also, if fed, very positive food, meditation, kirtan, chanting, all those very sentient aspects in life. It may be difficult at the beginning, but the mind will slowly adjust with that, and it will like that. And the mind inherently likes sentient pursuits more so than static ones. So as you do it, you will get psychic momentum. The main thing is, don't give up the meditation frustrated thinking that my mind is running and I can't control it. Stick with it. We all have that period. Just stick with it and you'll gain that sense of momentum. That's the way. The way to overcome a wandering mind is to pursue the practice, to get the mind disciplined.
It's a good answer. I like it. What do you think about awakening, Sayam? What's your take on all this ascension and awakening? I mean, here we are at the end of 2020 and it's pretty wild right now. And I'm just curious, like, what's your take on all this? Like, how do we rise above everything and just focus on that self-realization part of ourselves?
Right. Yeah. No, I know that's so important. And it's so, and this is a key time for that. And I think when I made my awakening little video, I think I used the word samvit, S-A-M-V-I-T. It's a Sanskrit word, which means psychic. So it means awakening. And the yogis have so much, they've said so much about this in yogic poetry, yogic literature, about coming out of one's psychic slumber. Or psychic lethargy. And that's the key. And that's a key point. And I think this is an important time for that, just on so many different levels, but that we have to build that into our lives. It's not something that happens automatically. No one can say, oh, I've been in India for 6 months living in an ashram, voila, I'm awakened. It doesn't cut it. You know, nothing externally can do that other than your own pursuit. That's why spirituality is really, it can't be bought and sold. People may try and trick others about to make a profit or whatever, saying, oh, I'm so realized, pay me this money and I'll tell you this answer, whatever it may be. There's all sorts of shenanigans that go on in the realm of spirituality in that regard. But ultimately, everybody's got to walk the path. That's what we're born to do. And you can't, there's no shortcut. There's shortcut in materialism. There isn't shortcut in spirituality. So we have to build that into our day-to-day lives to make it a practical piece, a real veritable building block of our day. It doesn't happen automatically. Rather, if we're not doing it in our day, we're regressing. We're going the opposite direction. So I'd say be really practical about it. Say between 7 and 7:15 in the morning, or 6 and 6:30, or whatever time. Build that as part of your day, just like you would. No one's going to sit in their kitchen and not go near the refrigerator and the stove and expect to be fed just by sitting at the table. You have to take action to do it. And the same way that you take action to feed yourselves, take action to feed yourself psychically and psychospiritually, that it demeans. Never think that, oh, I live in this part of the world, or I'm born in this era, or it isn't a matter of fate. It's a matter of effort. It needs focus. And sadhana, the word for meditation in Sanskrit is sadhana. It means effort. It doesn't mean realization. It means effort. We can't control the realization aspect. We can control our effort. And we should put in practical times during the day that we're going to pursue our practices, our meditative practices, our contemplative endeavors, our reading, our study, our satsang with other people. And that's a big step for awakening. I say keep it as practical as possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and I think just what you're saying, you know, it's effort. I think when I did my 200-hour teacher training, it's been a year or two now, yikes, it's been a while already. But I think one of the things that I really got out of that experience was yoga. There's no resting in yoga. And it's not about being some kind of intense athlete. It's really about focused effort, just like you're mm-hmm. talking about. There has to be focused effort in the practice. And it's the same with all of the refinement of the spiritual practices. And I think this year, what I've gotten more than any other year is we must refine our practices right now. Like, that's what we should be doing. You should not be watching the news. You should be refining your spiritual practice and, you know, putting effort into your meditation practice and into your yoga practice, into your going outside. I mean, whatever it is, journaling, inquiry, you know, any of those things. I just think it's so important right now. And it's been my saving grace this year is when I'm really been focused and disciplined, it's really kept me centered. And when I start to wobble or I get afraid or I'm get all out of balance, it's usually because I'm not doing those things.
Right. That is extremely well put. A very, very, that sense of refinement is so key. And the good thing about meditation is that it's so difficult that when you do it, it makes everything else in life easy. Everything else becomes easy because there's basically a blueprint for the other aspects of life, and they're tangible. And I don't mean to say that meditation is so difficult, but as we apply ourselves to that, naturally, all the other aspects of life become easy. And when we can make the other aspects of life easy, that frees up more and more time for our spiritual refinement, for our types of, we gain time because we become more efficient in the other, realms. And and our pursuits will change, our daily pursuits will change. So that refinement aspect is totally key. And I also like what you said about when you feel afraid. That's a key point. That we can't live afraid. And if someone feels afraid, then it's like, that's a surefire check-in of whether, you know, that leads to the worst answers and the worst life choices when we act out of being afraid. And it's natural. Everybody feels afraid at sometimes, but that should not become our modus operandi, right, that we're working out of that psychic approach. And earlier you talked about how do you check in, but that would be, that's like a lit fire. If I'm feeling afraid or nervous about nothing other than existence, or where it's one thing if you're afraid because the bridge collapsed. That okay, there's a physical reason for it. But there's another feel afraid if you just there's no external phenomenon other than that's one psychic became one psychic home for a moment. Then it's like, well, I need to get out of there. And the way to get out of it is to be proactive in our spiritual practices, in our yogic practices or those pursuits that allow us to refine ourselves.
Yeah. What do you think about, Iyengar talks in Light on Life about the meditation in the nine petals of yoga. The meditation's really at the end. You really can't even get there truly unless you've done this other work with your body and you're disciplined and you're purifying. Like you're talking about purifying your diet, your environment, removing these toxins from your life, and then you can meditate. And it really resonated with me when I read it because I've been meditating for 20 plus years because of my psychic ability, like just because I was seeing and feeling things, I went to meditation to try to understand it and to try to connect with it. But it wasn't until I found yoga, and this goes back to Claire's question, like struggling with focusing. The very first time I had pure, clear meditation, not a bunch of noise, not a bunch of clairvoyant images, not a bunch of stuff, was at the end of my very first yoga class. It was like, hallelujah. Yeah. I can finally meditate because something about Shavasana at the end of the practice just took me there. And that is how I found yoga. And that's why I've been practicing it all these years, because it's the only time I can clear my mind completely is after that. And so all of that context to just ask you, like, what are your thoughts on, novice meditation versus a yogi meditating? Does it matter? And, how does that look?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a little bit of the what came first, the chicken or the egg type of query, and it's a very meaningful point. One thing is sure, that as you refine one's life practices, then you're going to be, that will help fuel one's meditation. If you're waking up clear-minded versus hungover. I mean, it's a quite dramatic kind of crude, but nonetheless, then that naturally that's going to have a big impact. And the more you can refine one's daily life experiences, the more the mind will be ready. The mind will be freed of all those encumbrances. Someone who's smoking cigarettes all day, they're a chain smoker. How are they going to sit and meditate? Their breathing system's affected, and they've got this psychic addiction. How can the mind is under bondage. They think they're free because they get to smoke whenever they want, but actually they're in total bondage, that they're not free not to smoke. So naturally, the more we refine all our life practices, that frees the mind for meditation. But at the same time, I don't want people to think that I can't refine all those things. I can't, whether it become a plant-based diet or giving up certain drinks or whatever you want to call it. If you, wherever you are, take a step forward in that spot. Take a step forward in that spot. Say, I'm going to take two breaths. I'm going to sit for 5 minutes in meditation. And that will help you gain more mental force to clear up the other aspects of one's life that need clearing up, whether it be diet, whether it be life choices, habits, or hobbies, or psychic occupation. So the two can go hand in hand. I think that's important. And I definitely appreciate the idea that the more you do, the more you refine, naturally the mind will be ready to rocket ahead. And that's there's truth and power to that. But in this present era, as people are coming onto the path, they should feel that, because the mind has so much ability. One pure thought can clear up a lot. When yoga was being reintroduced in the 50s in India, all the people were enamored with the Western ideals of smoking and eating meat, and they thought that was the sign of greatness in life, that I had achieved enough financial ability to do those things. And they didn't say give up those things. Try meditation. And as you meditate, those things will fall by the wayside. Now, naturally, that doesn't mean one should kick in their heels and keep up all those bad habits, but there should be flexibility of mind to do the meditation. And also that brings openness and ability to refine. And naturally, the more you refine, the easier it is to meditate. So the two are like two wheels of a cart that they can go hand in hand. One should not, the final line will be, don't wait to make your life totally pure to then say, now I'm going to do meditation. That day may never come.
That's true. Gives you just another excuse.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we don't need that. That's well put.
Oh, that's so good. I invite you guys, if you have more questions, please throw them in the question box. We love it. And so what else should we talk about? I feel like we could talk about 1,000 things, Satyam. What else do you want to share today when we talk about remembering who we are? Your presentation is amazing. So you guys can find Satyam's presentation on oneheartoneearth.net. But what else have you got up your sleeve over there? Any thoughts?
Yeah, sure. One aspect of meditation is the use of mantra, and that repetition. And we should always tap into ourselves of how are we conceiving of ourselves in our day, because we all have a little bit of how we think of ourselves. And and that was one of the key points of the presentation, was in your one's meditation, that should help change one's daily outlook when they're going around in their daily endeavors. So that would be, for example, I am peace, I'm love, I am light. That type of self-conception is really, really important. And rather than thinking, and I guess this was some of the complexes that came up earlier, that I can't do this, that I can't, that I won't be able to succeed in this. And those things are big, big hindrances. Just to be cognizant of how we're progressing through the day, and set up a few reminders during the day when I'm going to focus in on some type of meditative pursuit, maybe for 5 or 10 breaths. And if one can do that 6 times during the day, in totality, it might take not more than 6 minutes. But if you can do that, it can have a tremendous impact on the day. That's something in terms of remembering our nature, remembering who we are. That's something to start small and to focus on it. And every time one does something good or takes the effort to move in a meditation way, that is you're investing in your own psycho-spiritual bank account. And that bank account will last with you forever. You know, sometimes people think about, always laugh about, not laugh, but long-term financial planning. That's important in life, our financial structure, but that our really long-term planning is our investment in our psychic outlook. That's really, that has far greater sustenance. It can never be taken away because it's something internal. And to come up with ways through the day that we can practically inculcate that spiritual ideal. And that's really a lot of what the yogis did. They created list after list. You know, when you take this bath, when you bathe, say this mantra. And the mantra is not hocus pocus formula. It is just a reminder, okay, I'm a spiritual being in this cosmos. That's the essence. I've come here to serve other people. So that type of constant perpetual reminder, they call it there's a word in Sanskrit known as dhruva smriti. Dhruva means fixed and smriti means memory. When the mind is fixed, when your perpetual memory is that I am a living embodiment of light and peace and joy in this cosmos, that when you don't have to remember that, but when that's part of your your modus operandi, then they say that's dhruva smriti. You've achieved fixed memory. Even in your sleep, you're thinking that. And so yoga is this perpetual practice of embracing an ideal that is actually very, very simple, but is difficult to remember. The ideal is not simple. The ideal is simple, but the following it and becoming the embodiment isn't so simple. And that's what the whole yogic day is about. If inculcating that as much as possible. So I think that's something that that we all can work on. It's a practical piece. Yeah,
I agree. And we need practical right now. We need practical things to do. And, you know, speaking of practical, you have been on the show all year. It has been awesome. And I love you so much. And we never, ever talk about your studio or what you do or what you teach. I mean, I think probably it's a given in a certain degree, but I did want to give you space. We have so many new people in the community to really share, because there are folks in there. I see some comments too here with Heather. I know that there are folks that want to get into yoga. They want to get started. They know it's got to be virtual now for the most part. And they're connecting with you on here, and you have an awesome website. And I say that coming from somebody who's built a million websites, I feel like, this year, but your blog is amazing. Like, I finally took some time to really dig into it. And I love some of the things that you have on there to share and offer, and you have all of these different classes. So what all do you want to share? Like, where do folks start? How do they want to, when they want to come into your community, what do they do?
Sure. Well, first off, anyone is welcome to write me anytime. I'm pretty active on communication platforms. And you can always just say, hey, where do I begin? And maybe it's something that you'd like to do at home, or maybe you'd like to join what we call the Ren Yoga community, the Renaissance Yoga community. I have live online classes 6 and 7 days a week. And those are very easy to access. That there's the schedule on the website. If you click on the schedule, then the schedule comes up and you just click the class, and one can actually enter the class. There's no paywall. We can figure that out later on. So I don't know if you wanted that type of practical thing in terms of they can practice. There's all the classes are also recorded. In this COVID era, everything's recorded, right? So so then there's classes on demand. One can pursue those. But I always think that, and this is one thing I do miss. Fortunately, I taught for 15 years in our community, was creating those links to always communicate. Okay, you're coming in for a class, but what's going on with you? And what can yoga, because yoga is so dynamic. I love hearing what's going on in their life, because yoga has such a great plethora of suggestions and answers and remedies and treatments and cures and of so many of different aspects of life. So I always like to find out, hey, what's going on? Okay, you're here for a class, you're here to stretch, you're here to meditate, but what else is going on? What can we do in a way that will help deepen your personal link with the practice? And I think that's really the sign of because the more we ourselves practice, the more we can help recommend to others what's going to be helpful for them. And so I always welcome that conversation. So let's get to know each other a little bit. And sure, you're welcome to join the class, but let's find out a little bit more. What other glue or sustaining practices can we offer in life that really are not really, they're not bought and sold. They're just offered as ideas, and it's for the next person to embrace them. And when you embrace something on your own, then that's tremendous momentum. You become the owner of that. And like you become, then you become, that becomes yours permanently. And so I always like the idea of a conversation to develop that link with someone and find out. And then, of course, as in the classes, there's always space now that I always had fairly rented out local studios that were pretty large. My class was very free form. People didn't have to register ahead of time. Just come on in. If you had seven cousins, come on in. We had usually pretty big halls, and that was always nice. And I always liked that idea that the practice was there for those who want to come, and you didn't have to plan for it. Just come on in. Just if you get yourself there, we'll drag you in the front door, no problem. And if you forgot your wallet, that wasn't a big deal. We could always take care of that. So that was always the nice thing. And I always tried to make it like a really neighborhood accessible place where everyone was welcome. And it's a little bit different creating that online, but it's also a little bit easier because I have students who moved away and they're like, this is the saving grace of COVID. I can practice with you all the time now. I'm in Washington State, I'm in Florida, I'm in, Western Maryland, I'm in Vermont, I'm in wherever, or Europe or whatever it may be. So that also is a nice place. And in our classes, we usually have it open where everybody's open to talk and introduce themselves ahead of time. And after, we usually tell stories and discuss things and talk. And that's a nice way to really build community through communication.
I love it. And Jennifer says, I've read some of Satyam's blogs as well and just love the relationship he writes about with his mother. What a beautiful human. So thank you, Jennifer and Satyam. And Greg has a question. Now, we only have a few minutes left to answer this question. I feel like this could be an entire show, but I am going to read the question because Greg says, what are the yogic beliefs on death and transportation? It seems the West is fear-based and the East embrace it as part of the journey.
Yeah, interesting. That's wonderful. That's a great question. The yogis see death as a very natural form of transformation. In fact, they say the body is just a tool for you to use. And just like when we go to sleep at night, then we wake up and put on new clothes to do because the old clothes got soiled from the day's work from prior. So then we take rest and then we take on new clothes to do our work that day. And they say the changing of the clothes and the changing of the body is very, 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 very similar. That it's nothing to worry about. You'll continue the journey. In fact, death happens all the time. But the only time we really think in the Western world that it dies is when we lose the connection. Like my mom no longer has a 2-year-old baby. She loves to talk about, when you were an infant. I hear that all the time. But she doesn't have that infant anymore. That infant has died. But because she could track the link from that infant to this shaggy bearded fellow in front of her, she thinks everything's okay. But theoretically, that she can no longer cradle the baby and all that. That's finished, because life is constant. But we only when we lose the link, that's when we really get scared that something's really gone. When in fact, it really isn't. It's just change of form. But we can't follow the transformation. We can't palpably as the mind becomes more developed. You may be able to. You may be able to figure. So death is just looked upon as just a change of form. That's why the yogis say always invest in the mind, because it's the mind that's your permanent abode, and that's where your real investment is. That's going to really determine how you proceed in this world from life to life. And not the material things, heck, and half the material things we accumulate in this life, we lose in this life. I mean, all the toys I had and whatever, this thing, that thing, so many things are lost. I can't even find my sunglasses these days. What happened to those glasses? So the main thing, so death is, it's a change of form, and it's no different than the type of change of form that we're constantly undergoing, only that we can't follow the link. And that's where it becomes so scary for people. But the yogis say it is really not is not a fear-based thing. Rather, it's just one more step of transformation. And the more one is meditatively involved, the more one is that fear dissipates. It just does, because you're so used to living your life with your eyes closed and making that spiritual connection that when that the idea of then that really melts the fear of it. It melts the fear of the unknown. Is that's what yoga does? That's what meditation does. That unknown becomes known. You feel like you have an inherent link with the cosmos. So then, if you're going to lose your relative hearth and home, it's not a big deal because you think that you have a greater hearth and home anyway. So that's one of the most beautiful things and most empowering things that yoga has to offer, that meditation has to offer, that you feel like this whole cosmos is your home, and what you are right now is just a temporary phase. And that allows you to greater resourcefulness in this life. So so that's the yogic outlook is very empowering in that regard. And meditation is very helpful on that. And that the transformation from life to life. The other thing is yogis say that so long as you're in this body, oh, work like hell, do everything you can. Never think that to end the life, they say work while dying, die while working. Keep up your endeavor, keep it up. Maximize everything you've been given, every single potential. To not do that is, criminal. That you have to utilize what you've been given and utilize it all the way up to the very end. And then when it's really time to make the crossover, then that will be taken care of for you. Don't worry about that. But so we should always think, I'm in this world, I should do something meaningful, I should do something positive. And yes, it's a temporary abode. The runners say, run through the end of the tape. Don't coast to the finish line. Run right through the tape, that last step. So that's the yogic ideal, just to follow that all the way through. And the meditation helps a lot with this life-death transformation, either both with your loved ones and with your own self.
I love it. That could be a whole show, don't you think?
Yeah, that's another one, yeah. I once did a seminar on, it was called Life, Death, and Samskara. It was about death. And someone said, no one's going to show up for that one. No, you can't do a seminar on death. No one's going to come. We had a full house.
Oh, I believe it. I believe it. Because even if you're afraid of it, you want to know. You're like,
no, that's the greatest unknown. That is the thing. And the yogis, that's been a big thing. In fact, the yogis always say, never forget that you're in this world for a short while. Because then if you do that, then you'll always be doing the most important work that's right in front of you in an efficient manner. It's like if someone has to leave the house in 5 hours, they'll lollygag around the house. And when the 5 hours pass, they'll wonder, what the heck did I do? But if you have to leave the house in 5 minutes, you'll get your keys, you'll get this, you'll get that. You'll be very efficient, very focused, the 5 minutes will be extremely well utilized and you'll walk out of the house properly. Whereas the other way, if you feel like, oh, I got time, I got to. So yogis say, you don't know how long you're going to be here. Always think that you may not be here that much longer. And then the idea is not to inculcate some worry that you're going to be leaving, but rather the present moment will be best utilized.
That's awesome. I love it. Ah, Satyam, time flies in here. Jeez Louise. It already is time, but I love you so much. And you're going to be back all next year with us, which we're so excited about. Oh, me too. And you guys can find Satyam's presentation right on oneheartoneearth.net. So please go on there if you haven't already, and you'll be able to view his presentation, which is so beautiful. And all his information, links to Renaissance Yoga, everything is up there. He has a special offering as well. So you can get that all on the site. And we will be back in 5 minutes, yes, we will, with Aimé Cartier, who is another sweet soul who's going to be talking about owning your intuition. So we are, we're 5 hours into it.
Nice.
We've got 7 to go. We can do it, at least for today. Thank you, Satyam. I love you. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you so much. Mwah. Namaskar, everyone. Thank you.